Okay, thank you. Hi, everybody. Welcome to NJIOA's Lessons from the Jaywalker, Breaking Free from Compulsive Food Behavior. My name is Toni Ann. I am a compulsive overeater and a bulimic, and I'm the moderator for tonight's meeting. I just want to start off by saying perhaps many of you have done the same thing as me. I swore off doing eating certain foods and certain food behaviors. And every time I would make another promise, I would break that promise, and I'd make the promise and I'd break it again. And it started with the food for me, but it was many more of the behaviors than just overeating. And it wasn't until I came into this program and by the grace and God of this program and the 12 steps, I found a different way to live. And tonight we're going to hear from three women who have also found a different way to live their life and who are also struggling with compulsive food behaviors. And I just wanted to read something out of the big book. We're going to start off with a reading that's on, it is on page 37 on the bottom. If you have your follow along with me, it is the Jaywalker. Our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first strength as that of an individual with a passion, say, for jaywalking. He gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years, in spite of friendly warnings. Up to this point, you would label him a foolish chap having queer ideas of fun. Luck then deserts him, and he is slightly injured several times in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. Presently, he is hit again, and this time, he has a fractured skull. Within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley breaks his arm. He tells you he has decided to stop jaywalking for good, but in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. On through the years, this conduct continues, accompanied by his continual promises to be careful or to keep off the streets altogether. Finally, he can no longer work, his wife gets a divorce, and he is held up to ridicule. He tries every known means to get the jaywalking idea out of his head. He shuts himself up in an asylum, hoping to mend his ways. But the day he comes out, he races in front of a fire engine, which breaks his back. Such a man would be crazy, wouldn't he? You may think our illustration is too ridiculous, but is it? We who have been through the ringer have to admit, if we admitted alcoholism for jaywalking, the illustration would fit us exactly. However intelligent we may have been in other respects, where alcohol has been involved, we have been strangely insane. Strong language, but isn't it true? Okay, and with that, I'm going to introduce our panel tonight. All right. First, we have from Pennsylvania, we have Dara. Dara, can you give us your last initial, please? And at the end of the recording, we'll be getting all of the speakers' information. That's okay with them.
Dara. I'm Dara L. I'm an anorexic and bulimic, and I live in Pennsylvania.
Go ahead. Welcome, Dara. Does somebody want 15 minutes? We'll time you. You want a break?
Sure. Is it? No worries. Is it 15 or 20? I'll just set a timer.
I think it's 20. Go ahead, 20.
Okay, great. I'll just set a timer. I'm just going to pray before I get started. So God, Goddess, Goddess, Spirit of light and love, whatever is up there, out there, in me and in all others, please give me the courage and the capacity to tell the truth about the nature of my disease, that I might help at least one person tonight. Amen. So my name is Dara. I'm a chronic, hopeless, bottom of the barrel, low bottom, anorexic and bulimic. I was actually really nervous. I'll just tell on myself. I was really, really scared when I was asked to speak today. And I'm almost never scared when asked to speak. But the last time I gave a talk in a large OA meeting was on the story of Jim, the story of Fred, and the story of the Jaywalker. And I think I was about a year and a half abstinent at that point. And at 2 years abstinent, I had a relapse. And so now I'm, you know, a little shy of 6 months sober. And so it's like, how does that happen, right? How does someone go from being abstinent, from having recovery, from identifying as recovered, to moving in front of that, that moving vehicle again? But that has been my story, right? So anyone who knows me or knows anything about my recovery journey, knows that it's a miracle for me to be here today speaking with you. I was a very low bottom bulimic and anorexic. I've been institutionalized 18 times in long-term facilities where I was told that I would not be able to live on the outside of an institution. You know, the story of the jaywalker, it talks about kind of being shut up in an asylum, hoping to mend his ways. But the day he comes out, he races in front of a fire engine. I remember one time I was on the way out the door of a treatment facility and I stole granola bars on the way out the door and I was binging and purging on the way home, you know, or I'd get out of treatment and I'd be like, okay, well, you know, I know my meal plan said this number of whatever, these foods or whatever, but I'm just going to cut out some from breakfast, you know? And it was like the day after that I would start. And also, you know, I think for me, the shame wasn't so much about being the things I did before coming into program, but it was the things I did after coming into program. So the fact that like I came into these rooms in 2008 and I started to have a spiritual experience and I started to see like, oh, I am addicted to emptiness. I'm addicted to purging. I'm addicted to laxatives and vomiting and overexercise. And, you know, just, I love that this meeting is behavior focused because that is the core of my disease. I want to be as small and as empty as possible. I want the illusion of control. You know, as an anorexic, I want to weighed and measured life. I want to be the most special person in OA. You know, I want to win the gold star for the most abstinent, you know, person, that there can be, you know, and I came in 2008 and I started to see the nature of my disease and my feelings of unlovability and my striving for superiority through food and through my body and sleeping with people, you know, I mean, my sex inventories have been miles long. I was living a split life. I was suffering a split self and I started to get better as I started to tell on myself. And as I started to get honest about my thrill seeking behavior, because that for me was what bulimia and anorexia were. It was like, how do I get high? How can I feel that rush? You know, and I chased that. I chased that to the point where it almost killed me and it destroyed relationships. And so I came into these rooms and I started to feel a measure of relief, but I wasn't willing to give up the thrill. I didn't even know what I was addicted to. And in fairness, I think it can be very hard for anorexics and bulimics in the rooms of OA. I know it was hard for me. So I'll speak to my own experience because I was told things like, well, cut this out and cut that out. And I, as an anorexic, I'm like, yes, I'm going to cut it out. Like, how much more can I cut out? How can I be like the most vegan person? Or like, maybe I'll like cut out histamine foods or whatever. Like that's part of my disease, you know? And so I tried to do that in OA for a long time. And what would happen, my pattern was I would get abstinent from the bulimia. I would get abstinent from binging and purging, which was the most destructive manifestation that my disease took. But then I would do other things. Like I would still be taking laxatives and I would still be, you know, my food would be getting narrower and narrower and my life would be getting smaller and smaller. And I would be getting more and more tightly wound and over-exercising, but I didn't understand that like that was my disease. That is the core of my disease. And I would talk to people in these rooms and I would say things like, you know, I'm eating the same thing every day. Like, I think that might be a problem. And they would say like, no, you like, clearly you're surrendering. And I'd be like, okay, clearly I'm surrendering. And it would be unsustainable. And my path in OA was I had 2 years abstinence, which looking back, I now see as like really controlled eating, restrictive eating. And then I would have a relapse into bulimia and I'd be binging and purging. And I'd be like, where did this come from? I had 2 years of being a good girl. I worked the steps. I sponsored, you know, I did all the things. And then I'd get, you know, back on track, which to me was just like restricting again, but like moderately, you know, and then I would relapse again after another 2 years. And this has happened to me. This is my fifth time. I can't even really introduce myself as recovered anymore because I've recovered 5 times. I worked through the steps and what I knew to be entire abstinence. I was sponsoring, I was doing service on meetings. And my last relapse, what I hope and pray was my last relapse, I led a meeting with, you know, hundreds of people on that meeting. And at the time, I'd been weighed and measured abstinent for 2 years. My food was all controlled. It looked great. You know, my sponsor was like, good job, you. You're doing it. You never deviate. You never have food changes. You call everything in. You're following all the rules. And that's what my recovery looked like. That was the easy part for me. And I'd have friends call me and be like, yeah, like I'm getting sloppy with my weighing and measuring. And I'd be like, what is that? Like, I don't understand that. Like, I love weighing and measuring. You know, I love being like perfect at the end of the day. I think I felt so superior. It was like I was striving for superiority through my food and how I ate. And, you know, I think that for some people, what I was doing would bring them freedom. But for me, it brought me the illusion of control. And it brought me a feeling of like being separate and not being human. And, you know, and today my recovery is about being messy and human and real and big and expansive and all the things that as an anorexic and a bulimic, I don't want to be. So, at that point I had recovered for 2 years, relapsed, 2 years, relapsed, 5 years, relapsed, 2 years, relapsed, and 2 years. And so it was like a little over 2 years into this weighed and measured abstinence. And the whole time I thought, you know, in 2012, my colon shut down. I didn't go to the bathroom for 5 weeks and I was put on laxatives. And so I'd been taking laxatives since 2012 and I'd been taking them as directed. And I thought like, okay, I can't live without them. This is part of my medical protocol or whatever. And come to find out, I think it was really just a manifestation of my disease and my addiction to emptiness. And so I'd had a colonoscopy at the end of December. And I remember I started having thoughts about purging again and like wanting to be empty. And I talked to people about it and I did 10 steps about it, but I was obsessed. You know, the jaywalker story, right, is about not being able to get the jaywalking idea out of his head. I was like every day, like, did I go to the bathroom? You know, like, am I empty enough? Am I too full? Am I this? Am I that? Like, I was just a crazy person, but I thought I was doing all the right things because I was weighing and measuring my food and I was committing that, and I was working with sponsees and I was leading meetings. And on what I hope was my last relapse, I was walking, I had just finished leading a meeting. I got done with that. And just the thought came like, I need to go binge and purge. I just need to go binge and purge. And for me, that is the lowest of the low in my disease is that expression. I describe it like being a heroin addict in AA, you know, like I can get a little bit drunk on almost everything, but for me, bulimia is my heroin or my crack cocaine. It takes me to places that are just really depraved and really violent towards myself and other people. And I shut off from the world. But I had learned in this program that I needed to be honest. And so I was walking out the door and my mom called me and she said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm going to buy binge food. And this is a woman who supported me through like 18 different treatments and hospitalizations, multiple death scares, seizures as a result of this disease. You know, I mean, I've lost everything. I've gone bankrupt. They say jails, institutions, and death. I've been in jail. I've been in institutions. I have not died yet. Although I have come close, right? And she was like, oh my God, you know, are you serious? And I said, yeah, I'm serious. Like in this program, right? They teach me that I have to be honest. And I left my house and I went and I binged and purged and I called my sponsees and I called my sponsor and I was like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I am so broken. I did everything right, what I thought was right. And I woke up the next day and I swear I heard the voice of God because I'd started two-way prayer, you know, in my recovery. And I swear I heard the voice of God say, just eat 3 balanced meals a day. Like you are an anorexic. That is what recovery looks like for you. Stop trying to be like other people. Stop trying to be perfect. And I ignored that voice. You know, I want to say that I always listen to God. I don't. I'm disobedient by my nature. I'm defiant. I want to do things my way. And frankly, I want to figure out how to be an OA and be a little bit underweight so that I can be beautiful and be loved. Like that has always been my goal. And so I ignored that. And I went back to my previously restrictive food plan. I did know that I needed to give up laxatives. So I did that. And then, you know, a few days later, I woke up again and I heard that same voice and I called a friend in OA and I was like, this is what I think I need to do. I'm an anorexic. I'm a bulimic. I need to, like, I can't do recovery like I'm being told to do. And this friend, God love her, like, who is a compulsive overeater said, you know, I think that's your disease talking. And I was like, F that. And I went and I binged and purged at her and at this program and at my disease and at all of you people. Cause you know, my disease doesn't really speak to me as compulsive overeating. It speaks to me as restriction. It's like, you know, every binge I've ever had has started with a diet, whether it's a diet that I've actualized or a diet that I've just imagined. And it started with like these crazy food rules, like, oh, you can't eat meat or dairy or vegetables or whatever. Like, I mean, and you know, everybody has their food rules in OA. I have my food rules in OA, but as an anorexic, I need to refrain from, I need to abstain from unnecessary abstaining because my life gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. My food gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And I've watched it happen so many times in this program. And I think it was a little bit shy of 6 months ago, that I woke up and I was like, I just can't do it anymore. I just can't measure my body. I just can't measure my food. I can't monitor myself. Like I can't trust me and I need to surrender. And I found an eating disorder specific dietitian and I started going to her and she weighs me and I don't weigh myself. And I gave up exercise at that point. And I hadn't exercised for 5 months. I've now started again with, where I surrender that and someone tells me what to do and it's very light. It feels like nothing to me, you know, and my life is bigger than it's ever been. And I reworked the steps. I reworked the steps with a sponsor who was like, let's work it on your purging and your addiction to emptiness and your addiction to making yourself small. And so we did that. And I was so, so grateful. Like I have not purged in any form. And this is the first time in my life, even though I can tell you, you know, I was abstinent for 2 years and 2 years and 2 years and 5 years and in different treatment centers and all that, like, that's all true. But there were ways, I think, even that I was gaming the system when I look back, because I didn't know what my problem was. I thought I was a compulsive overeater, you know, and I couldn't find freedom because I kept identifying, like, I thought that the problem wasn't that I was running in the middle of the street or something. Like, I don't even know if I'm trying to use the jaywalker as an analogy. It was like, I stopped running in the middle of the street where the cars were coming, but I somehow went onto a different street where there was just a different set of cars. Like I didn't understand what recovery for me was supposed to be. And I didn't know how free I could be. And in the last like 6 months, I have traveled more than I've traveled in years. I have eaten food with people that I love, that love me more than I have done in years. I've been naked in front of someone, which is something I didn't think I could do in this size body. You know, like, I mean, it's just amazing to be fully and completely in my life. And I think what I've learned about recovery is that recovery is a bridge to life, you know, and for some people maybe who, whatever the manifestation of the disease is, I think that's what we need to address. And I think it's really beautiful and precious to work with someone. And when I sponsor, that's what I do. I work with someone to be like, how does your disease show up, right? Like, what are you addicted to? What is your mental obsession? Because that's the thing I think that needs to be surrendered, the mental obsession and everything that supports it and everything that supports the physical allergy. And I didn't know when I was in OA taking laxatives and exercising in a way that was very kind of rigid and controlled and perfectionistic, that was feeding my disease. I didn't understand, you know, I didn't understand that when I would call my sponsor and say, hey, I think I need to cut out fruit from my diet, not for any reason, but that I just thought I would be more pure or more special or more like whatever, if I did that. Like I thought that somehow that was coming from a place of recovery, but it was for me, anytime I want to restrict, it's coming from a place of disease, unless there's a medical reason, unless someone tells me I need to do it, you know, anytime I want to empty myself, it's coming from the voice of my disease and my addiction. Anytime I want to gorge myself so that I don't have to deal with life and I can stuff down my feelings, you know, my disease is all about self-hatred and self-punishment and perfectionism. And there's so many other ways that it shows up in my life. Like food was a metaphor for me. When my food got smaller and more controlled, I got smaller and I got more controlling. And you better believe the people around me have always known long before I did that I was in the disease because I got like really all up in their business. You know, I'm very perfectionistic. I've broken up with so many people on the way to a treatment center and been like, I can't deal with you anymore. You know, I'm going to start over my life, you know, because I purge people from my life. I purge friends. I, you know, it's relationships, things I saw that, you know, money and impulsive spending. And there's just so many ways that my bulimia shows up in my life. And I need to know what my issue is so I know to stop running out in the middle of the street. And today I can say I'm not obsessed with being empty because I worked the steps. I had a spiritual experience. And I don't crave that with the same intensity. Occasionally I'll think about it, you know, I didn't introduce myself as recovered because I do still have thoughts sometimes of like, oh, like maybe my digestive system would feel better if I cut out dairy, or like maybe I'd be healthier if I ate a little less or whatever, you know, and I don't know if those thoughts will ever go away completely for me because I've spent 31 years in active addiction. I'm 39 years old and I was 8 years old when my anorexia started. I was 14 when my bulimia started. I didn't think I was going to live past 29. I've lived a really like very intense life in this disease. And I'm so grateful that, you know, just for today, I am in recovery. And I'm grateful that when I look back since I walked into the doors of OA in 2008, I have had far more years out of the binging and purging behavior than I've had in them, you know, and I've had far more. Like my life is nothing when I came into this program. I had burned everything to the ground. I'd lost jobs. My family wouldn't speak to me. I had no friends. I have no friends from high school and college, you know, and today I have a full, beautiful, expansive life and a relationship with a higher power and relationships with people in program. And I've worked the steps multiple times. And I recently finished all of my amends and I'm like, what? Cause I created so much wreckage. You have no idea how much wreckage I've created in my life. And it's amazing that today I'm, you know, mostly free. And I just wanted to share something that really stood out to me. It's on page XX of the Big Book of AA. And it's something that I come back to because as someone who has been a chronic relapser, who doesn't know, like, I don't know, I'm giving this talk today. I may or may not be abstinent and sober tomorrow. Like, I don't know. I know the power of my disease and it's caught me unaware so many times that I don't know what the future holds. But on page XX, it says, it gives a promise. It talks about, AAs who come into this program, get abstinent and work the steps. And it says, of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. And I really come back to that today in my recovery because I think, you know, my hope is that I'm going to be the 25% who sobered up after some relapses. But also like, maybe that's not my story, but I do know that I'm a person who has showed remarkable improvement through the diligent application of these steps to my life and a willingness to let go of the aspects of my disease that I identify as problematic. Sometimes it takes a while to identify them as problematic. But today I'm not wandering out into traffic and I'm not obsessed with the feeling of emptiness and I'm not, you know, obsessed with being the skinniest person in the room. I still would like to be the skinniest person in the room, but I've let that go so that I can have a big, full, expansive, beautiful life and a relationship with a power greater than myself who loves me and is teaching me one day at a time to love myself and the people around me. So anyways, with that, I'll pass, but I'm really glad to be here.
Wow. Thank you so much, Dara, for sharing your courage and your hope with us. That was perfect and perfect on time. Okay, next we're going to be hearing from Kelly S. from Oklahoma. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey guys, I'm Kelly S., recovered compulsive overeater, bulimic, and 100-pounder. And it's funny that you read that part in the Big Book at the beginning, because I just heard an AA speaker talking about that same thing too. And I think it just gives a lot of us hope that have been around for years, because if you haven't heard my story, then I've been around for decades, literally four of them, 40 years this year. And so it's taken me a long time. I just celebrated a year on the 25th of recovered abstinence. Super grateful for that. And so that paragraph does give us all hope that, you know, don't leave before the miracle happens. And like Dara, I've had a lot of gifts from just staying here. And I'm so grateful that I did not leave. And I, okay. So like when I came in, I was 20 and I was just like way too cool for all of you guys. I was bulimic and nobody talked about that. My mom, you know, I came in when I was 16, but I left because everybody's too weird. But I started binging and purging, you know, as a teenager. And my mom took me to a counselor back then. And I remember the woman saying, "You do what when you eat?" And I still never have forgotten that because the shame involved. And so I came in the rooms, you know, I'd struggled with my weight off and on up until that point. But at that point, I was actually 20 pounds underweight. But I knew that binging and purging wasn't normal. And I was so thin and I couldn't even get out of my sweats. I tried to go to college twice and would dropped out. And I was in sex, drugs, alcohol, you name it, chased everything I could. But, you know, food has always been my first, you know, fix. It's been my first fix, that's for sure. But like a lot of you guys, even at a very early age, I always felt different from and apart from everybody else. So always looking for something to fill that. But anyway, when I came in, you know, I stayed because I had nowhere else to go. I mean, you know, I had tried everything. And even in the rooms, having been here for 40 years, you know, I ended up my top weight over 100, almost 300 pounds in the rooms, right? And so even in the rooms, I tried all different other things. The insanity of like going, well, I'll just go to one of these pain ways. That'll be my food plan when I come to OA. Or, you know, I went and did the things where you get the prepackaged food in OA because that'll just be my food plan. I would try all these crazy things because I was just here really to stop the craziness, you know, to stop the binging, the purging, even binging and purging numerous times a day. I got up to almost 300 pounds. So I know I could have easily been a 600 pounder for sure because it opens up a whole nother way of eating. And so, you know, when I first read The Jaywalker, you know, I fall in love with the big book more and more all the time when I read it. And so when I first read The Jaywalker, I was like, that is like the stupidest story I've ever heard. And I was like, that's weird. I don't get it, whatever. And like, now I read that story. I just read it right before I came up here again. I read it, I was reading it out loud to my wife. And I said, this is like, I was telling her how I thought it was the stupidest story. And she's like, well, I didn't think it was stupid. I'm like, well, it's just so crazy. As my disease progressed, I'm like, oh my God, I am the Jaywalker 100%. Everything about the Jaywalker is me in the rooms of OA. Because I mean, if you think about it, I just turned 60. Most of my life has been here. So I've been the Jaywalker here in these rooms. And that's why I think the story speaks to me so much because of the insanity of coming in and hearing about this disease. And I love to call it the dis-ease because it's a dis-ease that I just keep trying to fill. And it took me decades to find out that that emptiness was not going to be filled with food or sex or drugs or alcohol or any of those things. It was going to, you know, that I had a spiritual malady and I didn't get it because I was still chasing one thing after another. And the behaviors have been such a huge thing for me because it's always been one thing or another. And what I've realized is regardless of what I use, whether it's food or binging or starving or sex or alcohol or spending, I'm putting up a wall between me and my higher power. And that's the solution, right? That's the solution. And, you know, it's like, I would just get off on, I was just so focused on, I just wanted to be thin. I wanted to be not only like, dare I laugh so much because I'm like, not only I wanted to be thin, I wanted to be, and was in my own mind, Miss OA many times, many times, you know? And so, you know, I'd worked the steps. So I thought, I'd lose my weight. I've lost over 100 pounds a couple times here. And, you know, then I was a somebody, you know, that then I mattered somehow. And, you know, the insanity was I'd get that thrill of, you know, giving the weight loss, the attention, all the stuff you get from that. And then I'd eventually that, you know, that mental obsession would drive me back because I didn't have a spiritual solution. You know, I had abstinence. That's it. I had a good food plan. I've always known that I needed, you know, more of a structured, disciplined thing. And so I'd weigh and measure my food. I'd do all these things and I'd arrive in my mind. And so, you know, the insanity for me too is also a part of my behaviors is a huge part of my behavior is the dishonesty in every area of my life and not just about food. Because, you know, my sponsor that I work with now told me that I had to live. It tells us in the big book, we have to live by spiritual principles. This is in working with others. It tells the new person. That's one of the first things is tell the new person they have to live by spiritual principles. Well, nobody told me that. I mean, they really didn't. I never heard that. Like, I for real tried to be abstinent in this in the rooms of OA and was having numerous affairs with people in the rooms. You know, but that's not what I came for. I came to lose weight and be abstinent, right? I wasn't living by spiritual principles. And, you know, the dishonesty thing has been a huge part of my life since I was a little kid. So that's part of my behaviors today is learning to be rigorous, honest about every area, not just what I'm putting on the scale, not just what I'm putting in my mouth, you know, how I'm being in life, right? So the Jay Walker thing I love because I just want to share with you guys. So like, in 2015, you know, I started listening to Vision for You, big book study. And it was 2013. And it was kind of my Ebby because I've been around forever and never really heard the message that, you know, to follow the instructions in the big book. And that it was a spiritual malady and we needed a spiritual solution. I mean, I heard the words, but I wasn't getting it. You know, I just wasn't getting that. And so, you know, in 2015, I was willing to put down the food and did work the steps out of the big book. And I actually became recovered and I was recovered and abstinent for 4 years. And, you know, I tell people for almost five, but I'm not really sure what that means because that last year was just a lot of bullshit and all the stuff that I used to judge people about, you know, like, overeating on abstinent food. What the hell is that? Right. But so this is me in the Jay Walker story. When I was asked to read this or to share on it, I'm like, that last year, I was the Jay Walker the whole year. So here's the deal. I had 4 years of abstinence. First of all, let me tell you guys this. In all my years, I never had a whole year of abstinence ever. You know, I would lose my weight and I'd be abstinent for some time. Then I'd go back in the food, binging, purging, gaining weight, all that. I'm sure you guys know that cycle. So I finally had a year. Then I had 2 years and I had 3 years and I'm sponsoring people and I'm leading meetings and I'm moderating and I'm doing workshops. I'm a somebody, you know, like I'm like, Bill, I've arrived. I didn't think that because Bill says that in his story, which isn't a good part of his story, right? So I'm not going to think that in recovery, but obviously I did. And so that last year, the dishonesty was such a behavior for me that this is what would happen is for me, I am a volume eater. So I do weigh and measure my food. And so to me, it wasn't so much the fact that, oh, I'm having an extra green bean or I'm having an extra tomato. It's like that I'm telling somebody, here's what I'm eating. I'm sending my food plan to my sponsor, right? I'm saying I'm going to have, you know, 8 ounces of vegetables. But while I'm weighing them, I'm eating them too. While I'm weighing things, I'm eating them, but I'm not telling people that. I'm not telling about that, right? Well, it's just some extra vegetables. It's just extra food. It's just extra whatever I was supposed to already be having. And so it's okay. I'm okay. It's fine. And I would do that for a few days. And then I'd be like, okay, you really should tell somebody. No, I'm okay. I don't want to tell anybody. I'll just get right back on because I haven't really binged. I haven't eaten anything that's alcoholic. I'll just get right back on. And I'd get right back on and I'm okay. And I would do that for, you know, I would get really on it and I'd be all strict about it. So now I'm okay because I'm strict with my food. I'm okay. Right. And so I would do that for a few weeks and then I'd get sloppy again. And then I'm like, I would talk to people. I wouldn't share what was going on with me in this. I'm not doing, you know, my 10 and 11s. I'm not doing these things, but I'm sending my nightly review. Like I'm not being honest in any area, but okay. I know I need to do this. I'm hearing this message about honesty. So, okay. But I won't tell them because if I just start doing it now, I'll be okay. So I'd start doing it now. And that's the scary part of our disease is we can get a hold of it, which gives me that false security that I see there. I tried really hard before and I got it. If I try a little bit harder, I'll get it right back. Right. I mean, that's that thing with him in this, Jay Walker, I love, because he's like, you know, you'd think if I was normal, I'd stop doing this bullshit. Can I not see that every time I go right back into it? No, you know, and I think I've decided for good, this time I get right back on, and this time I'm not going to get sloppy again. And now I'm okay. I won't have to tell anybody, but in a few weeks I'd be back breaking both my legs. Right. And so then I'd be back doing it. And it just snowballed. And this whole thing of, you know, this Jay Walker story is me inside me. It's not me about any promises I made to anybody else and nobody knew what was going on. Right. So that's the scary part of these phone meetings and Zoom things. If you don't want to get on, nobody sees you. They don't see that you're gaining weight or what's going on, or they don't see the lights are off in your eyes. Right. We can disconnect from that. And so, you know, it's this thing of, you know, the behavior over the years, well, over that year, my conduct continued and accompanied by continual promises to myself, you know, I'm going to clean it up. And then also, this is the other thing. I didn't want to be honest with people and tell them, because you guys needed me to be in recovery. I was a message of hope. I'd been here 30 years. I finally had it. I was a somebody, and you guys depended on me. I couldn't let you down, right? And so in the meantime, it's progressing. And it says, he tries every known means to get the jaywalking idea out of his head. I just kept listening to more meetings, more podcasts. I get on these really strong AA speakers. I hear this message of honesty. I'm like, stop, God, you know, okay. And I would just not listen. You would think a normal person would be like, okay, Kelly, what the hell, you know, whatever this power is, do you not hear there's this message about honesty coming through and everything? A normal person was like, wow, that's pretty cool. Do you not see that God's talking to you, or, you know, leaving you messages? I was like, yeah, whatever. Okay. I'll get it together. I'm okay. Right. And so, you know, I try every means to get this out of my head. And then, you know, once again, I'd hope to mend my ways. I was racing back in front of the fire engine, and I'd pick it, you know, I'd do it again. I'd get sloppier and sloppier, because it's okay. You know, you think that this illustration is ridiculous. And the best thing, you know, that actually happened to me, and I know it sounds crazy, but maybe not, is that behavior escalated to the point that it just becomes so, you know, foggy, and gratefully, I ended up binging and purging an entire day. And you can't bullshit that, you know, you can't bullshit the fact that you have to leave the house 3 times. I'm in a house that I swore I'd never binge and purge in. We bought this house 6 years ago, and I'm like, I'll never have to eat here. I'll never have to overeat. I'll never binge and purge in this house. This is so great. And I'm binging and purging in the sink and leaving 3 times because I don't have any food worth binging and purging on. And I mean, it's like Dara said, for me, that's just sticking a needle up my arm. And so I couldn't lie about it anymore, but for a full year. So it's the weirdest story when I share with people and I say, well, I had almost 5 years. That's really iffy. I'm not really sure what the hell was going on that last year, but it was me being the jaywalker, trying to convince myself I won't run back out in the street. And I snowballed back into it. And so for me, so much of the behaviors is all linked around the honesty thing. I mean, all of it, whether I'm being sloppy with my food, or I'm not doing, you know, not doing my spot check inventories, you know, not being honest about my behavior, you know, I'm doing other things and I'm not talking about it. It's like, this is a design for living, you guys. This isn't just a program to lose weight and get our food under control. So I can't go, well, my food's under control, but I'm being shitty in every other area of my life. But I'm not going to talk about that. You know, it's like, and that's the thing, is it's like, to me, that's that jaywalker thing, where I just think, well, as long as I'm not overeating, I'm not playing in the street. I'm always out there playing in the street. I've been playing in the street since I was a little girl. And it's like, it's just insane to me that mental obsession, and something you had said, okay, I guess I keep cross-talking, sorry, but Dara said about, you know, what we have to address, whatever the mental obsession is and the physical allergy. It's not, you know, the big book tells us the greater aspect of our disease is the mental obsession. So there's so much more about this, you know, because the spiritual malady is all of that. It's not just food. It's not just weight. It's not just, it's all of it. You know, what am I doing that I'm still trying to get a high off of, that I'm still trying to get some sort of kick that I'm not talking about. I'm not sharing with people, whether because my ego thinks I can get it together, which is bullshit, or my ego, I guess, too, of shame and not wanting to share with you and think that, and to risk, you know, being honest with you about what I'm doing or not doing. And so in the meantime, I'm just shutting down when I start put, you know, we hear it over and over. When I'm dishonest, I basically put a big sign up that says, keep out, higher power or God, whatever. And that's exactly what happens. And when I do that, I shut out God, I shut out you, I start shutting out myself. You know, that whole thing about the deception of others is nearly always rooted in the deception of ourselves. I'm telling you guys, it took me decades to understand what the hell that sentence even meant. And I think you have to live it enough to finally get what that means too. And so, you know, I'm just so grateful today that I realized that it's about all of my behaviors, every behavior in my life. I have to be transparent and authentic and be willing to risk with you what I'm thinking or feeling or not thinking or not feeling or not doing, and not just be like, well, as long as it's not about the food, who cares? It does matter. It all matters, because until I understand that this is a design for living and that I'm putting down the food to get to God, to get this power so that I can start living life different, I'm going to keep on running out in the street and getting hit by those damn cars until one day, like, you know, she said too, I'm, that's going to kill me. It's going to kill me. And I hope to God that today I'm going to go to the crosswalks. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kelly. Thank you so much. That was amazing. And next we will hear from Rachel Kay. And Rachel, I know you told me what state you're from. Can you just repeat that again?
Indiana.
Rachel from Indiana, yes. Thank you so much. Go ahead, Rachel. You have 20 minutes. I'll let you know when it's getting close.
Thanks. Can you give me like a 5-minute warning? Cool. Hi, I'm Rachel Kay, a compulsive overeater from Indiana, although right now I'm in Chicago. And you talk about Miss OA. I just feel like, you know, can I be like second runner up? Dara and Kelly, those were awesome. You know, if you can't fulfill your duties as Miss OA, you know, maybe I'll step in, but those were awesome shares. And so I'm blown away. I'm really just so glad to be here sharing with, you know, two amazing women with such amazing recovery. So thank you for that. And something that, you know, stood out to me also is that we all, you know, we all have this common disease that has different manifestations, but it doesn't matter because it's all stuff that we do or that I do that blocks me off from the sunlight of the spirit. So I'll give you a little bit of my background. I came in when I was 15 years old. And I'll try not to crosstalk, but there's just so much that, you know, that I got from the last two speakers. I came when I was 15 years old. Y'all were profoundly uncool, did not, you know, want to be here, but I knew that I belonged. I knew that I belonged. This was in 1985. And by the grace of God, I finally got abstinent in 2000. It's totally a God thing. It is not a me thing. It's a God thing. But I was in these rooms for 15 years. I never left, but I was in these rooms for 15 years, you know, binging, also purging was part of my story as well. I was more addicted to the binge. The purge was just something that I could do so I could binge again. You know, I ended up being a fat bulimic. And so, you know, my thing was, I can't even do bulimia right. And definitely, you know, the jaywalker, when it talks about something that stuck out to me that it hadn't when you were reading it, at the very beginning was, you know, the chap with a queer idea of fun. And, you know, you think, yeah, jaywalking, who the hell gets off on jaywalking? Well, who the hell gets off on doing some of the things that I did? And, you know, not just and talking about the compulsive food behaviors of, yes, I binged on, you know, half gallons of stuff and big packages of whatever. But there were other things that I had to look at and be rigorously honest. And for some of you, this will not apply, and that's fine. And if you're brand new and the thought of giving up some of these things is like, I can, that is fine. You know, think of it as whatever it is that you're doing that is impairing your life and cutting you off from God. But I was, you know, I would follow a food plan and be like, okay, so I can have, this is before stevia, so I can have equal, right? Equal sweetener. And then I would end up eating, you know, I would stick to my food plan and I would end up eating a box of 280 equal packets. No joke. You know, I guess if I were a lab animal, you know, I'd have cancer and be dead. Things like chewing so much gum that my jaw hurt. But I'm legally abstinent, right? I haven't gone off my food plan. And for me, those are the kind of things that cut me off from the sunlight of the spirit that I had to look at. And, you know, it's sort of like, am I following the letter of the law or the spirit of the law? Not that it's a law, but that I had to look at. And when I finally, you know, let go and let God, it was like, God, I don't care. I don't care what I have to do. I don't care, you know, what I have to give up, what, you know, just that's it. I have a piece of chewing gum in back home in one of my drawers that is 23 years old. It's a piece of Carefree chewing gum because it was too much for me to say, I'm never going to chew gum again, because like that was my methadone. I was so afraid. But when I realized, okay, this is something that is coming between me and God, because God doesn't move, but I keep on putting these little things in there, whether it's the chewing gum or whatever it is. And if you're okay with chewing gum, God bless you, chew away. You know, if you can buy a pack and it lasts you all week or whatever, that's fine. But I can't do those things. They cut me. I can be compulsive about anything. And when I finally looked at, and I love what, you know, one of you said, is that it's not that I am getting closer to God so that I can, you know, become abstinent. I'm becoming abstinent so I can get closer to God. When what I craved was a relationship with power more than I craved the food, that's when the miracle happened for me. I can be compulsive about anything, you name it, and I'll be compulsive about it. I used to, and maybe this is going to be kind of gross, and I can't believe that we're recording this, but there's a product called Beano that you take, you know, so you won't have gas, and it's sugar-free, but somehow the flavor of it, like, yep, I had to give up Beano because first of all, it didn't work for me. Second of all, you know, I was chewing them like candy. Another thing that I've had to look at, and I know a lot of people in program struggle with eating too fast and shoveling their food in. With me, it was just the opposite. I can make food and my meals a production, just making it like way too sexy. And I would eat really, really slowly. My grandmother is a slow eater and she would be done before I would finish, you know, eating dinner. And I would have to have everything just right, you know, and this is while I was trying to follow a food plan, quote unquote, but everything just right. And, you know, and all the right condiments and whatever. And really it was because I was concentrating on that. It's like, where's God? If I'm, you know, at work and eating and I have my, you know, my crossword puzzle or whatever, God forbid it's your break too. And you come down and you want to talk to me. I want to be alone with my food. To me, that's not recovery. Even if I'm eating according to the food plan that I'm following, where is my life? You know, when I am so focused on that, that it's like, no, I want to be alone with my, you know, my abstinent food. Something else, you know, talk about doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, like the jaywalker. My sort of MO is I never have enough time. I have never finished a to-do list ever. ever, you know, there's always something else. And I'm always like, don't have enough time. Yet when it was time for my meals, I would have, you know, watch TV, you know, always with the TV on, oh, you know, get the right thing, and wouldn't, and for a lot of people, working through their meals would not be a good idea. For me, it was like, look, I'm always complaining about not having enough time instead of having the TV and the food. And yeah, this is my perfect, this is my heroin. I've got the needle in my arm and I'm snorting something basically, which is what TV and food at the same time. I mean, yes, this is a smorgasbord of high for me. It's like, nope, the food is just nutrition. I'm working on whatever it is I need to work on, and allow myself, if I want a break, if I need a break, instead of having my meals be my break, like, oh, this is my break, then no, I can take a break and go take a walk or read a book or crochet or whatever, not making meals my recreation, my weighed and measured meals my recreation. And I do weigh and measure. You know, that's for me how I, you know, make it like alcohol is for the alcoholic, make it black and white. But trying to game the system is how I can use those food behaviors to keep myself from God and to keep myself from helping another compulsive overeater. Because if I am so wrapped up in my meal that, say, you know, I mean, not if I have like a time constraint, but if I am so wrapped up in my meal that you call and I don't pick up the phone, or what, you know, or I don't pick up and say, hey, you know, I'm about to eat lunch, can I call you back? It's like, I don't want to connect with anybody. I want to, you know, be on my drug. Then that's another way of using compulsive food behaviors to keep me from God. The, you know, something else that I have done also is, be, you know, with condiments, looking at condiments that, you know, if I'm doing something that I wouldn't do in front of another person, for me, that is separating myself from the sunlight of the spirit. You know, you talk about not wanting somebody else to sit next to you. You know, I have to look at, okay, eating with dignity. Am I eating my meal, even if I'm alone? And I live alone. So I used to have a cat, don't have a cat anymore. Didn't care what the cat thought about how I was eating. But if I was eating and I was doing something, if I am doing something that I wouldn't do in front of you, then for me, that's not sober eating either. I'll tell you, you know, going back to making food sexy, right now I'm in Chicago. I'm house sitting for my sister and her family. And my mom lives a couple of doors down, so I'm here for her. I get here, didn't have a lot of sleep last night. Of course, you know, put my food in the fridge, and I notice they have these cool little sparkly waters. Now, if you are okay with cool little sparkly water, that's fine. I can have those, you know, that's fine. But I realize I want this cool little sexy sparkly water because I'm feeling tired. My back hurts from being on the road. I'm feeling like a little let down. And it was like, no, you know what? They have all this cool food and whatever that I could switch out what I committed, which isn't very sexy. You know, I want to do that too. I don't commit my food because it doesn't make that much difference whether I have yellow peppers or carrots. Really doesn't make a difference. You know, God doesn't care, except to the extent of when I make a commitment, it's not so much that I'm committed this food, it's that I'm giving up my will. It's all about giving up my will. If I can give up my will so I can get closer to God, that's what it's about. It's not about, you know, does this calories equal this calories, or is, you know, are the food police going to come and arrest me for this? It's about my intention. It's about my spirit. Am I doing this because I'm going to get a hit off of it? Like I said, I can get a hit off of anything, or am I willing to sublimate my will to God's? Because that's where I found relief. because that's what I'm looking for, right? That's what we're all looking for. Yes, I could get away with, you know, this, or, you know, having four herbal teas in a day. Is it going to make me overweight? No. Is it, you know, are people going to start wondering what happened to me at meetings? No. But I want to be free, because then the next day I'm going to still want that thing, that occupation of my mouth. You know, I want my mouth. I had to realize, you know what? There's got to be times between meals where my mouth isn't busy, where I'm not drinking a soda or chewing gum or, you know, sucking on a sugar-free candy, because once those things are gone, then I can get in touch with a higher power. You know, then I can finally surrender and be like, you know what? What was I hanging on so tight for? You know, I hang on to those highs so tight until I'm finally ready to say, okay, God, hands off, I surrender. So I know I haven't used up that much of my time, but I would really like to hear what everybody else has to say about the food behaviors and the jaywalker. So I'm going to go ahead and cede my time. Thanks.
Rachel, thank you so much. And I'd just like to say a special thanks to all three of our panelists tonight, Dara, Kelly, and Rachel. All right. So at this time, Judy, if we can just stop recording the meeting.